And welcome back to Unicorns and Hand Grenades, everyone. My name's Jax, and my co-host Kim and I are rapt that you've chosen to join us in this series of real and raw conversations that we'll be having with each other and our guests, where we explore the nature of being human and embracing life in all of its brutal magnificence. We hope you enjoy this ride as much as we enjoy bringing it to you. So let's get into the conversation. Hey everyone, hi Kim, how are you?
Hi, I'm very good. Thanks.
You're looking super chill in your hoodie.
Looks can be deceiving. No, just kidding.
Yeah, this is true. Actually, maybe we'll explore that in a little bit, especially given the guest we've got on today. And Philly, so cool to see you. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, thanks. Nice to be with you guys.
It's really awesome to have you here. For our listeners, Philly and I met in 2020 at Claire Robbie's immersive meditation retreat. And yeah, she was someone that I just clicked with straight away, her and Helena. Yell out hello to Helena if you're listening. And I'll just give you a little bit of an intro to what Philly does, and then we'll just get into the conversation and see where it weaves. So Philly is from The Wellbeing Junkie, and she is all about inspiring you to get high on life naturally. And so when I say that, I don't mean naturally get high. I mean get high on life naturally. So we're talking dopamine and endorphins and all that really cool stuff. And she's officially working full-time in a career that allows her to inject her passions with her profession, something she started just recently, that big leap into the world of startup, own business. And so there's so much tonight that we're going to explore. I can't wait to get into the conversation. I'm going to hand over to Kim to kick it off.
Thank you. Welcome, Philly. So cool to have you here. I guess probably a good place to start us off would be, so well-being is something that's talked about a lot. And I think we all have our different versions of well-being or what we're striving for. But can you start by telling us a bit about what well-being really means to you? And I guess what the essentials are for you.
Yeah, cool. So I actually looked into the definitions, you know, on Google quite a few years ago when I started actually leading the wellbeing program at Chorus, my job back then. And to me, I was looking for something that was holistic. And the definition, I guess, of wellbeing was that kind of holistic state of, you know, mental, physical, spiritual, financial, that full spectrum of well-being. And I guess being in a state where you are, you know, life is fulfilling and you've got that pure happiness and a really healthy state of mind.
I like that holistic happiness that isn't derived from a destination or a place or getting a thing. It comes from within, because you can't mess with that stuff, hey, when it comes internally, because you're looking after all those aspects of life. Because I think quite often people will hear the word well-being and flip straight to fitness and eating good, because they're not looking at it beyond that space. And you talked about working at Chorus, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but Chorus won, or the team that you were on, won 3 awards for their wellbeing program 3 years in a row, hey? How exciting is that?
Well, it was actually this year that we won the 3 awards.
Oh, that's awesome.
The trifecta.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yes.
Yeah, so, in 2015, I was brought on to basically design and lead their wellbeing program, which, yeah, at that point was, is it wellness? Is it well-being? And it became well-being. And then that just, I guess, for the last 6 years has been this amazing journey of taking, you know, what was a personal passion and, you know, merging that into my HR profession. And I guess being able to, you know, weave that well-being into the culture and fabric of an organisation, you know, pretty large organization, and then, you know, 6 years later to see the benefits of you know, the impact that's had on the organization, and then to be nationally recognized for you know, the results of that has just been pretty incredible.
That's huge. And I love that you can weave that passion into an already existing job title, in inverted commas, that you have. So HR, and then just shifting that into wellbeing. From a fellow HR practitioner, Kim, what comes up for you when you hear that?
That sounds pretty amazing. What I wanted to ask you about that initiative, and perhaps in what you're doing at the moment and the conversations that you're having, where do people get stuck when it comes to well-being? Because I think we all have our blocks and can be challenged. What do you hear from people as the biggest, I guess, setback or barrier?
Time.
Yeah.
You know, and so I guess for me, I get pretty passionate on this topic and a little bit wound up at times. and I guess I as the observer see so many people that are just not prioritizing their well-being. And that could be in the form of mothers or fathers, you know, people that are prioritizing other people's well-being before their own. And we all know those analogies, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. But, you know, then you kind of go, okay, so people are not prioritizing, you know, the foundations of well-being. And, you know, we think of things like sleep, nutrition, exercise, hydration, you know, the real key fundamentals. But yet, how many hours a week are people scrolling on their phone and watching Netflix? And so we all have the same 24 hours, 7 days a week. You know, we all have the same time, but it's actually how we choose to prioritize our time. And I guess the thing is that, you know, the less we spend on prioritizing our well-being, you know, the sooner that's going to come and bite you on the ass, basically, in the future. And something that, you know, because sometimes people can, like you say, be caught up in well-being being on the physical aspect, and people think, you know, that's going to the gym and maybe that's, you know, eating salads and, you know, trying to eat healthy in that way. But you'll also get people that, you know, think they can get away with eating whatever they like. And we know some of these people maybe in our network, maybe on the call, I'm not sure. and people, you know, they get away with it, and maybe they have the body composition that also is still making them think they're getting away with it. But there is this acronym I like to remind people called TOFI, and it's T-O-F-I, thin on the outside, fat inside.
I don't like that acronym. Make it go away.
And I guess, you know, my point being is that it will catch up with you, right? And so over time, you know, things will be happening internally, whether it's hormonally, whether it's in your gut, or also whether, you know, mentally, because what we eat and put into our body, we know that that gut-brain axis significantly impacts our mental health. So it will catch up.
I feel, Kim, like this is going to be one of those conversations where we end it and then go, oh shit.
I think I used to be toffee. I don't think I am anymore, but it was really interesting when I was hearing you talk about the mums, because that's me. And just before you came on the call, I was having a whinge to Jax about my day, because it's been pretty good, but today I was just like, I've had enough now. And I think with us, especially with lockdown here being extended for another week, and just the cup running empty socially as well, and feeling like Cinderella without all the glory, I was like, I'm really over this today. Like, this has been quite challenging for me. But then when I heard you talking about some of the basics, well, I'm pleased and can sigh a little bit of relief that my sleep, exercise, hydration could do with a little bit of work, but exercise, nutrition is okay. I'm like, okay, so it's not all is not lost, but sometimes you need a reminder of that. And I've definitely had to put the brakes on social media a bit, especially with all the conversations at the moment, the side taking and the blame and all of that stuff that's going on. That's really not helpful for, I guess, my mental health. But yeah, it is about priorities. And to be fair, they've really prioritization in terms of possibly the spiritual and the, I guess, the holistic piece has slipped a little bit for me this week because I'm just feeling over it. So it's probably quite timely because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that are feeling the same too. And it's just trying to claw it. Well, we want to feel good. And so Netflix and chill and scrolling and online shopping are some of the things that people kind of cling to when you can't get out and do stuff to feel good. But it's, that's really that instant gratification, and it doesn't lead to anything great long term, especially for our financial wellness too, if we're buying heaps of stuff online. And
yeah, totally. I was listening to a podcast the other day. I'm just totally binge listening to Jay Shetty's On Purpose podcast, and really love the interviews with Dr. Joe Dispenza. And Jay was asking him about, how are you doing, Joe? You know, like, you won't be having all of these, live speaking events and stuff like that with COVID. And he said, look, I just said to my team and my family and whatever, in response to it, that I will not be a victim. And I will not let these external, events that are happening around me affect my life, and using this time to basically go into the cocoon. And I guess, like, this probably goes into some of the conversation of what you'd seen on my post, Jackie, is that as tough as these lockdowns are, I think this is when we really have to flip into the mental and the spiritual well-being and go internal. And the more that things come up, the more we actually need to go and hone in on what's happening. I think that's, for me, what lockdown is, that real opportunity to go inwards.
It's so interesting because we might air this episode. Usually we're in a fortnightly cycle now, and we've got a few in the can. We might try and air this one a little early and break the cycle given the relevance of the conversation. And I think the conversation is relevant for life regardless of whether you're in lockdown or not. And so for listeners listening overseas, in different parts of the country, we've been in lockdown for different periods of time. So Kim and I in Auckland have been in lockdown for, 2 and a bit months now. Slowly coming out, but it's a coming out with no real coming out date. And so this stuff, and especially if I think about it, you made a good point, Philly. You know, we know this stuff. Kim and I have been on big journeys. We've had our worlds turn upside down way worse than what is happening to us now. Yet sometimes, because we're human, we just forget. And we get triggered and we just fall back into old ways before we fall back out of them again. And so the post that we were talking about before we hit record was one that you'd done on your Instagram page. You'd done a call with Jimmy Hunt, who is a mental fitness health advocate. We've had him on one of our episodes. He's an amazing gent who just does some great work in this space. But you talked in that post about having a mental fitness silver lining light bulb moment. And I think you and I have had the same light bulb moments given our journeys. Do you want to talk us through a little bit about what you put in that post, if you're okay with it, around what your light bulb moment was?
Yeah. So I can't actually remember the context of what Jimmy was saying, but I think it was sort of about, doing the inner work. And I was sort of listening to him reflecting, I was in lockdown. I might have been alert level 4 here in Wellington. And I just sort of reflected on, a year ago or however long it was, here I was, I was in a lockdown the previous year, thinking, oh my God, I don't know how the people that are on their own are surviving lockdown. I just felt so sorry for them and just thought that would be, the worst thing that could possibly happen. Then funnily enough, I actually ended up living on my own after lockdown. My flatmate moved out. And then I have been living on my own ever since. And so when we went into lockdown earlier this year, I was in Wanaka and I was in the midst of how on earth do you get home in this chaos? And anyway, made it home and didn't even for 1 minute think, oh my God, I'm going to be on my own. And here I was, I came back from this trip into an alert level 4. And fortunately for me, I was in the startup phase of my new business, the Wellbeing Tick. And so I was just like, this is the perfect opportunity, like an incubator for me to just focus on this new project. And it also coming out of a holiday where, you know, you're a bit out of routine and, you know, the sort of wellbeing practices are, you know, like you're eating more soulful food and a little bit of alcohol here and there. And so it was a time for me to reset. And when I thought about it, you know, we hadn't, I mean, and I'm speaking for Wellington here, but, you know, it had been when was it? August. So, you know, the big holidays had been in summer, you know, like a good 8 months prior. And I think for some people, it was the perfect break. It was that perfect time to just reset and just slow down and go, oh, this is what this is like. But from the aspect of not feeling lonely at all, I realized how far I'd come in my journey of working on, you know, those fears. And I take all the credit to that, I think, goes to meditation. And so Jackie and I met in Labour Weekend last year at Maruia River Retreat, and Claire Ruby took us through this year. Well, it was actually a silence and meditation retreat. I thought it was kind of the other way around and overlooked the fact that it was 72 hours of silence. And I actually wrote a post when I came out of that retreat, and I said in that was, and it was a picture of me laying in the grass and these beautiful yellow flowers in the sunshine. And I said, this is the happiest I've been. And the happiest day of my 2020 was in silence. And the profound effect of being completely on your own in your own mind. You know, there were people on the retreat around, being in nature, and I just about probably finished a whole journal of thoughts and recalibrated and kind of found my mojo again. And it was incredible.
It's so powerful, isn't it? And what comes up for me when you're speaking is that saying, if not for my thoughts. So sometimes we can be in the exact same situation, but in a different place on our journeys. And the thing that would have terrified us, so the very first lockdown, at the back of a marriage separation, I'd been flatting with a friend, married for 30 years, moved into my own place a couple of days before. It was terrifying because the worst thing I could imagine was to be completely on my own and just disconnected from everyone. But I learned so much about myself then. And what Jimmy was talking about that you mentioned in your post was around that accountability that we have to sit with the discomfort that we feel. And that in our normal everyday life, the discomfort we feel is disguised by the shopping or the connection or the people or the things or the job, whatever. When that's stripped away, if we don't know how to sit with our discomfort, then we don't know what to do with what comes up and out of it. And so I think that's that distinction and difference. If I were to think of a year ago, the same situation for me, loneliness probably would be the word I would describe. Now I love my space, and there's been hard parts of this lockdown, but it's not because I've been necessarily just on my own. It's other stuff that's gone on with my dad's health. But now I very much look at being single, living on my own, as just alone. And alone is good. Alone gives you space. Alone means I haven't spent all day like poor Kim racing around the house picking up every wardrobe that her two boys have pulled out and thrown over the bedroom floor. And there's pluses and minuses to everything. But I think, yeah, if not for our thoughts. And so something that might feel like the most terrifying, traumatic thing ever, once you go through it and you experience post-traumatic growth, which is a choice, and something we're accountable for ourselves, then that's the difference. And meditation, I reckon, is a game changer, a real game changer.
Yeah, well, when I just think about it, you know, I've actually been going through this. I've turned 40 this year, and it's a thing. Like, you change, apparently, because no one tells you about it. Or maybe they do, you know, you're over the hill or whatever. But I have had some, you know, quite noticeable changes in my body. And so how that kind of presented was, you know, from a physical point of view, that, you know, earlier in the year I'd gone from being quite a competitive CrossFit athlete. And then there's just sort of been this gradual decline where, for anyone who knows CrossFit, you're always chasing numbers and times, and it's very benchmarked. So you know really if you're slipping, and I started slipping. And so then I was also, some of my gut issues were starting to come back, which is what got me on this whole wellness path in the start. And then I started to, because my part of my identity was being a competitive athlete, and all of a sudden my performance was not quite a competitive athlete, and I had to actually start pulling out of competitions, and that was also through recommendations through my doctor. And so I was just like learning all this stuff and just going, oh my gosh, you know, what's happening here? But the meditation gave me that ability to, I guess, check in with myself and really process what was going on. But then as I sort of, continued working with this amazing integrative doctor, and, you know, she kind of told me stuff that I'd already been told in the past by my naturopaths. And that was, you know, it was really like, you know, if I was just to sort of say it bluntly, like I'd burnt myself out physically from the CrossFit. And this kind of, not just the CrossFit, if I almost feel sick thinking about working full time, getting up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, training, showering at the gym, catching the train into town, working in, you know, the office all day, catching the train home. I'm like, doing that 5 days a week, like that makes me feel sick. And thank God for COVID, I say, and the silver linings that came from that. But over time, I guess, what I've been shifting towards, you know, the CrossFit was kind of the last piece, but, you know, I'd been really living in the yang far too much. And so my doctor was really trying to get me to move more into the yin and more yin practice, and a more, I guess, just focusing on like the slowing down, the gentler exercise, the, you know, walking over running, and the meditation and the breathing and the sleep. And it's like, now that I'm kind of like on the other side of that and can see what had happened, because hindsight is so powerful, and it just keeps on coming up for me. And I'm like, okay, now I can see how to be more high performing by slowing down. And it takes you so long to accept that.
Yeah, because our minds, the stories they tell us, I can only imagine what your mind was narrating for you, the story the whole way through, having to shift from the yang to the yin. Can only imagine. Kim, you're writing down lots of notes. What was coming up for you?
A few things, and definitely with lockdown and that opportunity to slow down and sit with the discomfort that you've touched on already. It makes it difficult, you know, for others to, and especially the identity piece that you were talking about, because I think I've grappled with that quite a bit through both lockdowns. The first one, after I'd lost both my parents, and going, who am I now and what am I here to do? And sort of trying to understand that. And then I think in this one is because of the because of the pace and the fact that my kids are a bit older now and very, very busy, and listening to you talk about sitting in silence and that whole connection to self, for me, that's probably the piece that I'm grappling with at the moment, the solitude factor, the connecting to self, the slowing down, because there's only 100 miles an hour here. And so slowing down for me is definitely something that I'm going to need to prioritize and put time aside for, because it's not really part of our day. And so meditation, you know, can play a big part in that, in that reflecting. And the slowing down with the discomfort that it brings, especially with what I've experienced, is like August, September, and October are really tough months with some of the milestones that come up for me. Dad's passing, mum's birthday, there's Father's Day in there, mum's anniversary was last week. And so all of that stuff comes up again, which is, who am I without them? You know, where am I at? Oh, the kids, you know, wanting to connect to mum and sitting with that real discomfort about, I just wish they were here. So it's all really relevant stuff, because whatever that discomfort is, whether it's the patterns that are in the way in which I'm living my life, the identity crisis, the perhaps seeing how you could be doing things better, which I have some reflections on as well, it is all really powerful stuff. It's just sometimes stuff we want to look away from, but take that on board. So that's really useful reflections from you. Yeah.
I just share a little piece around, you know, the identity piece and kind of like purpose, and, you know, something that might be helpful for listeners is, you know, probably where I've ended up today, you know, it's kind of been no mistake. It's been a very, you know, thought through path, and there's been a lot of kind of like self-development going on in the background. So I guess, you know, I've been single for quite some time, and you know, while that's been hard, and it still is hard, but it's sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not, I am really grateful for how I've had this period of time to really work on myself and really find out who I am and what my purpose is in life. And I started that journey by a flatmate actually of mine. We came back from the Christmas holidays. I picked her up from the airport, and she was telling me how she'd bought a gratitude journal. And I was like, oh, cool, I'm having one of these. I'll do that. And then she said, oh, yeah, and I've been thinking about my purpose. And I'm like, Jesus, that's like, whoo, like that's a big question. Like, I don't think that I'm like, no, that's, I don't think I could work that out. Like, no, that's for the really smart people. And anyway, I was so curious. So I got my gratitude journal and started writing in that. I would write two things I was grateful for, two things that made me happy, two success hurdles, and two things I desired. And I just started doing that for years and years. And then I found this amazing career workbook called Illuminate. It was by this lady, Yvette Luciano, in Australia, that sadly has passed away from cancer. But it was a reflections on the year, looking out to the year ahead. And then it had this whole section on career and purpose and defining success and all of this stuff. And it just kept, you know, leading me to well-being. And then I bought The Life Plan by a life coach called Shanna Kennedy in Melbourne, and did this whole workbook of values and all of that good stuff. And so I just did all of these kind of like workbooks and workshops, and it was just so clear. So if I then kind of go, well, where did that lead me? You know, had been working in this job at Chorus and starting up their wellbeing program. And then I was like, man, I'm just on this wellness journey, and I'm so passionate about nutrition. Oh, I could study nutrition. So I studied nutrition. And then it was like, whoa, this is cool. I love this. Maybe I could do a nutrition program at the gym. And so I did that, and it was like so successful. And they said to me, the gym said, well, if you're going to do another one, you better come back under your own brand. And I was like, oh, that's down the track. No, I'm not ready. They're like, well, you better be ready, otherwise you can't do it. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go 110% in because that's how I roll. So I then went through this journey, and probably at about this point or somewhere around there, I had written the flexible working policy. I was in quite a good position to see if I could test it by reducing my hours. So I went to 4.5 days and I started what was the Wellbeing Junkie probably nearly 3 years ago now. And that was really, I call it my passion project, where I had this eventually 2 afternoons a week to work on nutrition programs and coaching individuals. And somewhere a little bit before this, I'd done this amazing session with Joel Buzzard, who was my coach for a while. And he got us to write, he actually came into the workplace and got us to write like a really big, audacious goal on a piece of wood. And my one was, I wanted to have a portfolio career, self-employed, supporting individuals with their well-being and organisations. And you had to smash it with your hand. And that was kind of your commitment. And fast forward to today, I have been working on the Wellbeing Tick, which is a workplace accreditation program, award-winning, globally researched framework to support organizations to build thriving wellbeing cultures. I left my day job. I don't have anyone else at home to pay the mortgage yet, me. And it just happened. It was just felt so right. And it was this goal of, 100% role in well-being, and to have won those awards at Chorus and have been, spoken at conferences, and I've spoken to so many amazing well-being champions and leaders across New Zealand that have reached out to me and asked for, guidance. And I just thought I need to take this in a way that can help hundreds of Kiwi businesses. And so I'm on this amazing, another personal development journey of starting out this brand, which is finished, and the website's under development, and creating this amazing framework and just learning so much. And I just feel so, so fulfilled in my career that it doesn't even feel like work.
It's so amazing. Sorry, I was going to say, as an HR practitioner as well, having something, because I think businesses try to put in wellbeing initiatives, it might be like a weight loss challenge or a number of steps, and it really is quite haphazard. So it's going to be incredible to have a framework and something they can measure against. What a great thing. I'm so excited to learn more about it as it proceeds. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, and it's so nice to see your face light up, Philly, when you talk about it. So clearly our listeners can't see that, but your fear glowing. Mm. And it's not lost on me, the irony, that apart from the real intentionality that you started with, so the gratitude journaling, the actual thinking about your purpose, how that might play out for you, you were, like you said before, jumping on the train, going to work, getting up at 5, going to the gym. The bridge, the action that bridged the gap for you sounded like you stealing back 4 hours of your time. So you had a lead up in terms of your mind shift and your transformation, but that commitment to really test out just giving 4 hours as an incubator to that space and to that idea kind of percolating sounds like it was the real push to get you moving. And now look, you're sitting in a space where no wonder you're glowing, because it doesn't feel like work. It feels like, in listening to your passion.
Mm.
So what would you say to the people listening? We talked about time before as a block for people in terms of their well-being. And I think people understanding what their passion is also supports their well-being, because that's a spiritual side of it, right? That's being able to connect into who you are behind everything we think we are. So what would you say to those people that are self-sabotaging themselves by saying they don't have time, yet are watching Netflix and Instagram and all of those things for hours on the end?
I guess, you know, the motivation has to come from within. It has to be intrinsic. And, you know, it's cliche, but you can lead a horse to water. And so unless you have to make the decision that you want to change, there has to be a defining moment. And I've had clients that, you know, come in and they're sitting on my couch and they're in tears and they've just said, I can't do this anymore. I've got to lose this weight. I've got to change my job, whatever that might be. So you have to make the decision.
Well, the decision is made for you, right? It's that bite you in the ass moment that you talked about before. Sometimes hitting the rock bottom forces our hand to the decision. And I think about this a lot in terms of, because I played hide and seek with the universe forever. I knew there were decisions I had to make in terms of my work, my career, my life, my marriage, everything. I think a lot of the time comes back to one thing. If we make a decision and we're fearful of the consequences, it's usually about, will it work? Will I get egg on my face? Can I survive? How can I let go of what I've got? So it comes from clinging to, I don't know, what for you comes up when you think about that thing that holds people back?
It's so different for everybody, but I think this whole notion of a choice, and it's when an action is more painful than actually taking a step, and whether it's rock bottom or just waking up being like, is this going to be the rest of my life because it sucks, or whatever it is, that moment where you go, okay, it's just too uncomfortable to stay put versus taking one step. Sometimes it's a hand grenade, as we've experienced. Sometimes it's burnout, but there was no option to stay put, but it's a choice. And we were talking, and you were talking earlier about, and I think it was about the victim as well, like the choices we make around the stories that we tell ourselves. It's too scary. I can't do it. I don't know what to do. And, you know, whether you start to research or connect with someone or just start to deeply think about your desires or what you want, that moment to actually just take one step. And for you and your experience, Philly, it's getting 4 hours low risk, trying something out with the safety net of our job still, and then starting to, get that forward momentum. But it's all about choice, and that's choice of our narrative in our head. That's the choice of what we put into our body, reaching for the glass of wine or the glass of herbal tea, you know, whatever it might be. And it seems really simple when you put it like that, but it really isn't, especially if we don't know how to start. I guess some of us are there, some of us are still trying, and some of us have no idea. So what about some words of encouragement for people who are like, I need to commit something to my own well-being because it's really not there? How do I get going?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just thinking, it's really important to have kind of like, you know, a support crew or, you know, some cheerleaders that have your back. And there's so many different ways that you could, you know, get that support. And it'll, you know, and obviously there's, you know, some to suit every budget. So I just kind of go, you know, some of my biggest supporters cost me nothing. Mm-hmm. And so some of those supporters in my, you know, kind of time would be obviously family and friends. And I guess the what my encouragement would be there is be vulnerable. Mm. You know, like if you are struggling with, you know, breaking the breaking an addiction, or, you know, your relationship's not going well, or you hate your job, or whatever it is, like, you know, tell people the honest truth. And the more honest you can be, the more people can help you. Also in the workplace, you know, hopefully your people leader could be a good person that you could speak to get some, you know, support with your, if it's about your career. And hopefully your workplace has an amazing wellbeing program where there is, you know, a support model in place that you've got access to, you know, specialized counseling and coaching, and, you know, maybe a peer network within your organization that you can speak to others. So, you know, and that's my vision, is just that we've got workplaces that, you know, people can go to whatever support it is they need to help them. You know, from a career angle, mentors. I mean, I've had so many phenomenal mentors, and I'm so very privileged to be working with Sarah Laurie from Take a Breath at the moment. That's helping me with the Wellbeing Tick. I actually couldn't have done it without her. She has just been right there behind me the whole time. And, you know, jumping onto, like, you know, Facebook groups and webinars, and there's so much free stuff out there. Just, you know, just get involved and just start being, you know, listening to podcasts. It's, you know, there's so much help out there to just, you know, get started.
Yeah, it does come back to understanding what it is you want to move towards. And then listening to you, it's so much about connection. Because once you understand your intention and what you bring to the world and what you want to achieve, then connecting them with the right people or resources actually doesn't have to cost a lot of money. And we often put barriers up around that.
Yeah, and you might find that, you know, if you are stuck, maybe your circle of influence, you know, the five people we hang out with the most who is influencing us, if that circle of influence is also, you know, Netflix bingers and, you know, ciggy smokers and what have you, you might actually have to start considering, you know, who are your friends and who are you spending your time with. And, I mean, I made new friends through my gym, and, you know, I went off to geeky, you know, retreats and who knows what, you know, I just, you know, go and experience different things, and it might not be with your best mates or with your partner or whatever, but you just have to sort of follow your own path and what interests you and what's going to motivate you.
I think you've put up a really good point there. You can't transform if everything around you stays the same. And once you do transform, it's about just throwing yourself out of your comfort zone and you'll find new people and connections will connect back, like Kim and I did, with people who kind of get it, who are on the same journey, walking along beside you, people who will hold you up, who you'll help hold up. And that stuff does change. And I think we beat ourselves up a lot around that change often when we go through a transformation or when we have been through some tough stuff. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. So that's really good advice. I too, like myself, a really good geeky retreat, I have to say. Maybe one where you speak a little more.
Yeah.
But you do. They say if you want to connect to like-minded people, then go do stuff that speaks to your soul, even if that's running or CrossFit or walking or meditation or whatever that is. So a question for you. If you were to describe in one sentence the most impactful change to your life over the last 5 years, what would it be?
Ooh. Probably the realization that health and well-being is significantly underpinned by your mental state.
Love it. Yeah, that's really powerful. Really, really powerful. And I think that's a really good place to leave listeners on. It's that foundation of mental fitness.
Yeah.
really important for everything that comes after, because you can't, like you say, come to a thriving place of well-being if you haven't connected with yourself and got yourself into that place. There was actually, before we kind of round up, there was an article that I saw come across. We're getting a bit geeky in this episode, but I really like it. From Adam Grant, the organizational psychologist, around a new term that's come to life around the mental health spectrum since COVID started and since lockdown started. And it sits in the middle of the mental health scale, because we all have mental health or fitness. We just sit on one or t'other end. And so the bottom end might be depression, the top end might be thriving, but there's this whole new place in the middle that they've now put a name to, which is languishing. And I really like it, because so often we ask people, how are you doing? And they'll say, fine. And I mean, even people we know really well, Kim and I did it to each other before, and it's like, oh no, it's not fine. And off we went, and we got really in depth about what was actually going on. But for people to be able to go, actually, I'm languishing becomes a common language to almost explain that state of meh. neither here nor there. And when he talked about it in that article, it was very much around, we don't even notice it's happening. Like, we really don't notice it's happening. And so we do things like we withdraw, but we don't even know that we're withdrawing. We just kind of, we don't feel joy, we don't feel darkness, we're just kind of languishing.
And I read that, and I think back to your point before around mental fitness, and I thank Jimmy Hunt so much for this. He came into Chorus, and he spent a lot of time with us and the mental fitness network there, and it's about that toolkit. So what's in your kete or your basket or your toolkit? And when you actually go, from a physical health perspective, you know how well that's going. But when you actually sit down and go, okay, what are the tools in my toolkit for my mental health? It's quite hard to write that list. But you've got to start somewhere. And then over time, you'll start building it up. And then I guess that's when I kind of go, I mean, last year when I experienced, loneliness in a quite, when it really opened the crack of loneliness actually in my life for the first time last year, I was not in a good place. And having that toolkit was just fundamental. And I was so lucky to have all of those resources. And a lot of that came from influence in the workplace, knowing to, text 1737 and go, help. And they're amazing. And I think that for me, part of that journey was like, oh my God, I'm a well-being junkie and I'm not well. This is embarrassing. Or I'm a nutritionist and I'm going through lockdown and I'm eating like a pig. I'm a fraud. And there's so many things that we go to, but at the end of the day, we're all human. No one's perfect. And that's never the goal. Perfection is never the goal.
Oh, thank goodness for that, because I'd be far, far away from that goal. Okay, good to know. And I think, too, the other really cool thing, if you can sit in your discomfort, and I don't know why I should be sounding excited about this, but when you can sit there and you can go, okay, acknowledge what I'm feeling. So, for example, that loneliness is a really good one to use as an example. So I'm feeling alone, or I'm feeling lonely, because alone has a different connotation or sense. So I'm feeling lonely. But in our dark emotions, or at the things that trigger us when we get triggered, they can often lead us to what's important to us. So I'm feeling lonely. I'm feeling lonely because what I'm learning about myself is actually I really value human connection. And I'm starved a bit at the moment. But there's other ways to get that. And you can get that via using, if you were the place you're in, like you said, your toolkit 1737. So if we think about toolkits, I'd love to know what's in yours. And then if there's anything that you don't have that we've got in ours, we can add it. But I'm pretty sure you're going to have way more than what Kim and I have got in ours. So go, what's in your toolkit for your mental fitness?
So for me, it's really like from an exercise perspective and every kind of approach, it's that more yin than yang. So more not being too, you know, busy and heavy and full on and stuff like that. So I go to the gym 3 days a week. I go running with one of my best friends twice a week. And that kind of went from, you know, like training for half marathons and running for time, and it was all about speed and distance, to we'll just go for a run, have a chat. Amazing. I try to practice yoga 2 to 3 times a week, restorative or yin, so very gentle. And that's very much, you know, physical and mental. I like little, you know, I love my meditation. So I try, you know, 90% of the time it's 2 20-minute practices morning and evening or afternoon. And I love incense. Ever since we went on the retreat, I've become an incense junkie and just burn the shit out of that. I love nature. You know, tonight I just needed a break. It was just 20 minutes around the block, but I went through a little bit of bush and the birds were singing. I was just like, it just restores you. Journaling in the evening, not every night these days. And reading and listening to podcasts. I just love learning, you know, like just constantly improving. I just love that. And I find that when I look for podcasts, I will look for something that's in books, something that's relevant for me right now. What am I struggling with? And what else would be in my toolkit? Oh, definitely real food and nutrition. Vegetables. Got to eat your vegetables. And I think just, yeah, that human connection, just spending a lot of, I think one of my love languages is definitely quality time. So spending quality time with friends and family and creating memories.
Ah, that's an awesome toolkit. Creating memories, that's, I think, what's become really important to me now. Life's about experiences.
Totally.
More than amassing stuff and dollars and things. And, yeah, it's all about experiences. Yeah. I don't have anything to add to that toolkit. I don't think there's anything I can steal for it. Oh, no, I can. Eat my veggies, because my toolkit's very similar to yours. So, yes, eat my veggies is something I need to add to my toolkit, given that I've
800 grams a day.
How many?
About 6 cups.
I could do that probably in a month.
Breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, I've got an action point out of this episode.
Yeah.
Okay, now I've learned the word toffee. I also know that I really have to focus on eating my 6 cups of vegetables a day, breakfast, lunch and dinner. I'm going to start slow. Good, I'm adding that to my toolkit.
The insect. Yeah, fruit and veggies that are obviously a higher ratio of vegetables to fruit.
Okay, good. I'm going to add that. Thank you, Kim. What have you got in your toolkit?
Quite a few of the same things. I think top on my list was connection, but also affection. And I am also very fortunate that I have 2 little people in my house, because I get a lot of hugs and kisses, and I find that's actually really important for me, just having a cuddle. And so for that, no matter what, that makes you feel good. Same with nature and being outside. We're on a farm here. I've got calves that I'm rearing at the moment, so I can just get out and see my babies that I call every afternoon, and they come and see me, and just laughter and fun, like jumping on the trampoline, doing something silly, like just having a bit of fun and not forgetting the playfulness. That is definitely important for me. And then I've got a really neat group of mum friends who we have a WhatsApp chat, and it's everyone's got a great sense of humour. We take the piss, we laugh about it today, and if we're feeling frustrated, we share that. So that's real helpful, because then you know you're all in it together. My takeaways are meditation, as in, you know, making sure I can incorporate that more and actually dedicate time for that. I find I have moments of reflection throughout the day, but I don't actually set aside time to make that as a practice. So that is definitely a work on for me. Yeah.
Nice. And I do have one to add, dancing.
Oh, cool.
I love dancing in my lounge. And it's interesting that you brought up affection, Kim, because I think for people who do live on their own, I love hugs. And I can't even hug random strangers. And I can't even hug my son. I came around for the first time because he's not in my bubble, because I have to have dad in my bubble, but because dad's elderly and not well, it means I can't see the people who, not that he doesn't lift me up, but, you know, he's and can be a bit grumpy. And so I can't even hug my son, and I miss that. I miss affection and touch. So I've got booked in when we come out of level three, I've got a massage booked in. Because just that physical touch is really nice. Yeah. You don't have the ability to just go out and hug people like you would normally hug them. So that's it from me. Thank you, Philly, for all your wisdom that you've shared tonight and all your tips. And I know listeners will have taken away some stuff that they can put in their wellbeing kit and their mental fitness kit, and wish you all the best for getting the wellbeing tick. Where can people get hold of you should they want to work with you or learn more about you?
Sure. So Wellbeing Junkie, you can find me on Instagram, The Wellbeing Junkie. I've also just started Wellbeing Tick at Instagram, but that'll be launching shortly. And my website will be wellbeingtick.co.nz. And you can also find me, if you want to, from a workplace wellbeing perspective, find me on LinkedIn under Philippa Powell.
That is awesome. Thank you, listeners, for sharing your time with us tonight, today, whatever time it is that you're listening, and wherever you are in the world, stay safe, and we will check in with you on the next episode of Unicorns and Hand Grenades.